We're ready to go on another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's Word. And today I want us to start in Exodus chapter number 16 as we move very close to Mount Sinai. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting closer. And I need to remind you that they are traveling much more slowly now after the Egyptian chariot pursuit force has been done away with. That first week after their exodus, they were moving pretty quick from place to place until God got them between the mountain and the sea, and he did that on purpose to make them see that only he could take them through the sea and drown the Egyptians and end the pursuit. And I am very much convinced that that first week of travel from the 15th through the 21st is the reason for the Feast of Unleavened Bread every year. It's a reminder that that first week was kind of under the gun, so to speak. It was under the pursuit concerns. But once the Red Sea opened up and then it closed on the pursuit forces, they were now able to go back to a more, quote, normal, end quote, life. They didn't have to move so fast. Now, from the northern tip of the Gulf of Suez, which is where I think the crossing of the Red Sea actually took place, it's about 140 to 150 air miles, so as the crow flies, as we used to say, from there over to the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, which is also part of the Red Sea. Now, that's the distance that they needed to cross between the 15th day, well, the 21st day of the first month, and the 15th day of the second month, because that's actually where we're going to be here in chapter 16 in a moment. They could have done that 150 miles in less than 2 weeks. But instead, it gets drawn out. And I think God is doing this on purpose. I think he's giving them a little downtime, a little breathing space, but he's also letting them, and stay with me on this, he's letting them run out of supplies. Because when they left Egypt, they took supplies with them. But they've been consuming those supplies. They drank up all their water, remember, and needed to replenish that at Mara and then at Elim. And they're looking for other oases as they go along here. But they've also run out of their food supplies by the time the 15th day of the second month of the new Jewish year comes around. So in the first 30 days of their journey, God lets them run out of supplies. Chapter 16, verse number 1. They set out from Elim. All the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, or Sin, which is always funny. I remember as a little kid thinking, well, why is it such a bad wilderness? Why is it full of sin? I had been taught earlier in my life as a minister that Sin here, or Sin, was actually a Mesopotamian goddess of the moon, and that this region somehow worshipped the moon. But the more I checked on it, the less I was convinced that that was the case. And then I came across recently something that makes much more sense to me, and I'm surprised I hadn't seen it before. And that is that the word in Hebrew, sin, or Sinai for Sinai, is very close to the word for thorn bush. Sina. And of course, this region of Sinai is full of these thorn bushes. And it's one of them that caught on fire with the glory of God that started this story with Moses. And so I believe that the region is named that because there's just bunches of these thorn bushes all over the place. And that Mount Sinai probably has plenty of them on it as well. Excuse me. Now, having said that, we know that Midian is somewhere on the other side of the authentic Mount Sinai. And so they are on a road heading across the Sinai Peninsula, going across by the top of the Gulf of Aqaba. And that road, if they keep going east, perhaps southeast, will eventually go to Midian. Well, I believe Mount Sinai is on the way there. That there is a mountain that is in the Wadi Rum that probably is the authentic Mount Sinai. All right. So they arrive in the general vicinity on the other side of the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, of where Mount Sinai is eventually going to be, and they run out of supplies. Verse 2, the whole congregation of the people grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The people of Israel said to them, would that we had died by the hand of he who is in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. For you've brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. So they're out of food. They're out of whatever meat they had available. They're out of all the bread products, the whatever type of vegetable things they brought along with them, because it is spring, so they would have had spring vegetables that they could have pulled out of their gardens as they were leaving. And so now they are on the verge of hunger and say, we would have been better off to die in the plagues in Egypt than to come out here and starve to death like you've done to us. So they're again angry at Moses and Aaron. And really, they're angry at God, because God's the one that sent Moses to pull them out of slavery. And we see here something that often happens. People in dire straits get sometimes helped out of those dire straits by some well-meaning individuals, but then they run across some problems along the way, and then they get mad, and they start misremembering what it used to be like, thinking that they had it better in the past, when in fact they really didn't. Because remember, these Israelis were slaves. Chapter 16, verse 4 now. Then he who is said to Moses, because you know Moses, of course, went and talked to God about this whole thing. Behold, I am about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day that I may test them. Now pay attention to that wording right there. The manna is connected with God putting the Israelis to a test to check their genuineness, whether or not they were on board with God, whether they will walk in my law or not. Then on the sixth day when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily. And so now we're seeing at the very beginning here this story of manna and how it's going to be produced 6 days a week with a double portion on that sixth day and then nothing on the seventh day. And so this ties in again with the idea of a Sabbath day rest for the Israelis, even in cooking food. Verse number 6. So Moses and Aaron said to all the people of Israel, "At evening you shall know that it was He who is who brought you out of the land of Egypt, and in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord," or the glory of He who is, "because He's heard your grumbling against He who is. For what are we that you grumble against us?" So Moses picked up on that idea that I mentioned, that they're griping about God when they gripe about Moses and Aaron, because God directed Moses and Aaron to bring them out here to this very place on this time schedule. Now again, I want to remind you that they've arrived here at the wilderness of Sin so that they could encamp and have a Sabbath day rest on the 15th of the second month. And so Moses is giving them this information during that day of rest. Now, I want to throw something in here just for you to chew on, is that the Israelis can't just wander. They are following that glory cloud. And so when God's glory cloud stops, they have to stop. And they don't start out again until the glory cloud apparently lifts up off the ground and starts moving forward again. And so God has forced them, since the crossing of the Red Sea, to take a nice, slow pace. So that here they are, it's the 15th day of the second month, it's a Sabbath day on our calendar, and He has made them just kind of hang out here at this spot for a while. And while they were hanging out there, they've run out of supplies. And now, Moses is to tell them, before the sun goes down and the 16th begins, and before the sun goes down and a new week begins, that God is going to take care of you. When the sun goes down tonight, you're going to see something special. When it comes back up tomorrow morning and it's still the same day for us, you're going to see something special. You need to knock off the grumbling. Just watch. Just pay attention as God takes care of business for you. All right, verse number 8. Moses said, "When He who is gives you the evening meat to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, because He who is has heard your grumbling that you grumble against Him, what are we? Your grumbling is not against us, but against He who is." And so now we find out, when the sun goes down from the 15th going into the 16th, God's going to provide meat. Then the next morning when the sun comes back up and it's still the 16th, they're going to have bread. Here we go. It said, Moses said to Aaron, this is verse number 9, "Say to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, come near before He who is, for He has heard your grumbling." And as soon as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of He who is appeared in the cloud. So there's the cloud that has led them. It's the glory of God. I think it's the visible manifestation of God's Holy Spirit. It shines with light during the day and glows with fire at night. And so apparently it blazes up as the sun goes down and the 16th begins. And it says that the people looked over there, and He who is said to Moses, "I have heard the grumbling of the people of Israel. Say to them, at twilight," or between the evenings, You shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and then you shall know that I am he who is your God. And in the evening, which means as soon as the sun went down, and it's still light, quail came up and covered the camp. Now, quail is not a huge bird. In fact, when I was a kid, our preacher liked to go quail hunting, but he really wasn't a fan of quail meat. And so he would bring a big old paper bag full of these quail that he shot during his hunting to our house as a kindness to us. And we had to pluck these little bitty birds of their feathers and gut them out and prep them for a food, for a meal. And I'm telling you, there's like a couple of bites on the bird and then you're done. But they are sustenance. And apparently these quail came in by the millions upon the Israeli encampment when the sun came down. It must have been like a big, dense cloud of them. God must have been either bringing them into existence by supernatural power, or somehow he has collected them from all over the region of Canaan to the north and Midian to the east, and brought them at just the right moment to dump them here. So that's the first thing. And the Israelis are going to have to go out and grab all those things, catch them first. And they had bird nets. They don't think of like a butterfly net. Think of a mesh net like you use in your garden to cover your plants to keep the birds out. Well, if the same sort of mesh is held up between two poles or between two people, the birds fly into it and they get all tangled up, and you can harvest the birds that way. So they go out there, and that's what they do from sunset until it's probably past complete dark. And then they have to prep them. They have to pull their feathers and gut them and all of that. But then, when the sun comes up in the morning, another thing happens. In the morning, dew lay around the camp. Now, there is a little bit of surprise by that, because this is a wilderness region. This is a desert region. It's very arid. Dew comes from moisture in the air condensing on flat surfaces with a change of temperature from sun from during sunrise. So God has apparently pumped up the humidity in this area to cause big droplets of dew to form on all the flat surfaces around the encampment of Israel. And when the dew had gone up, meaning as it evaporated, it left something behind. That's the mechanism you should imagine in your head. There was on the face of the wilderness a fine flake-like thing, fine as frost on the ground. So first of all, the dew forms. Then when it gets warm, the dew evaporates and it leaves behind little pills, kind of dew-shaped pills, of a flaky substance. It's white, and it's just everywhere. Now, when the people saw it, they said to one another, now here's the Hebrew, manna, manna. What is it? Because they'd never seen anything like this before. They've been on the road for a month. Nothing's ever happened like this before. What is it? For they did not know what it was. And then Moses said to them, it is the bread that he who is has given you to eat. And this is what he who is has commanded. Gather of it, each one of you, as much as you can eat. You shall take an omer. Now, an Omer is about what would fit into a 2-liter pop bottle. So think about cutting the top off of a 2-liter pop bottle and going around and using, I don't know, a knife or something, a trowel, and you're scraping this stuff off of stones and leaves on acacia trees and on these little bushes, these thorn bushes that are out there, and you're scraping that off and dropping it into your little container until you've filled that container full of this white, flaky substance, this mana. What is it? And that's going to take you a little while. So God's not just giving this stuff to him for free. He's not like dropping tortillas on the ground for them. He's making them have to work for it. And they're going to have to do this for the next 40 years. Every day, 6 days a week. Twice as much gathered on the sixth day of the week. And an omer of this material represents what is needed to bake enough of a bread ration for one person. So each family has to get an omer, 2 liters, for each person in their family. It says, you shall take an omer according to the number of the persons that each of you has in his tent. And so the people of Israel did so. So every morning, they're going to spend a few hours probably gathering this stuff up. And the people did so. They gathered some more, some less. Now, some people got greedy. And this will come out in the story that they were actually acting out of greed. Probably thinking, well, I need more. I need more than an omer to feed myself. Or I want more of a supply on hand so that I don't have to go out every single day. But other people are a little bit, I don't know, some of them might be timid. Some of them might just be kind of weak and unable to do that work, to scrape together 2 liters worth of this material. So some gathered more, some gathered less. But, verse 18, when they measured it with an omer, whoever gathered much had nothing left over. So they thought they had collected a lot more than an omer. But when they checked it against an actual omer container, it was exactly an omer. Whoever gathered little had no lack. So they thought that they'd, man, that's all I can get. I don't know if it's enough. When they actually measured it, God multiplied it, made it enough. And then Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it over till morning. So what they're supposed to do is use this like flour. They'll mix it with some oil. They will make little cakes and bake them and things like that. But whatever they have left over is not going to be around. They were supposed to probably burn it if they didn't eat it all. But, verse 20, they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it till the morning, and it bred worms and stank. So any extra they left got maggots in it, and it stank to high heaven. And this is God's way of forcing them to work 6 days a week, gathering this mana, this what's it, and to trust him for their supply. This is the beginning of what we see in the Lord's Prayer. Give us this day our daily bread. It's that daily dependence upon God. Moses got angry with him. And then morning by morning, they gathered it, each as much as he could eat. But when the sun grew hot, it melted. So there was only enough out there for them to gather in the morning. So they can't wait until the afternoon. They got to do it in the morning. Now, we've got a couple of minutes left before we close up for the day. We'll come back and talk more about this mana, this manna, this what's it, in the next section. But I want to remind you in Deuteronomy chapter 8 that God is the one that did this on purpose. Deuteronomy is written at the end of the 40 years. It's part of Moses' farewell address, and he's explaining the history. And so he goes back, and this is chapter 8, verse 3, talking about God. He says, he humbled you, that is, he put you in a tough spot, and let you hunger, so he let you get hungry. He let you run out of supplies. And he fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Now, does that sound familiar? Those of you that are long-term Bible students, you're going, that's what Jesus quoted when he was tempted by Satan to make supernatural bread in the wilderness. And you'd be spot on. It's this passage right here. So the whole manna experience was an object lesson that just like you need to trust God for your daily bread, you need to trust God in everything he says. You need to listen to what he says and do what he says exactly as he says you need to do it. So it is an exercise in obedience and trust. See you next time we get into the Word.